FM.
You're tuning into 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and WBAI.org for all of our listeners on the web. That last program was Code Pink Radio, which you can hear every Thursday from 11 a.m. to 12 in the afternoon. Now, normally we would have Gary Null on at 12 o'clock, but since today is Thanksgiving, since today is a holiday, we here at WBAI actually have a special live stream that's going to be coming on shortly, and it is from the United American Indians of New England, and they're having a live stream live from Plymouth, Massachusetts. So please stay tuned for that. Once again, Gary Null will be back tomorrow at 12 o'clock, but since today is a holiday, we will be having a live stream of the United American Indians of New England live from Plymouth, Massachusetts. So please stay tuned. Thank you all so much once again for tuning in to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Can you remember the time that you have held your head high and told all your friends of your Indian claim? Proud, good lady, and proud, good man. Your great great grandfather from Indian blood sprang, and you feel in your heart for these ones. Oh, in books and in song, that we've been we know pays the cost.
Once again, listeners, you are now listening to the United American Indians of New England live from Plymouth, Massachusetts, with the 51st annual National Day of Mourning. Since 1970, Native Americans and our supporters have gathered at noon on Combs Hill in Plymouth to commemorate a National Day of Mourning on the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. Many Native Americans do not celebrate the arrival of the Pilgrims and other European settlers. Thanksgiving Day is a reminder of the genocide of millions of Native people, the death of Native land, and the relentless assault on Native culture. Participants in the National Day of Mourning honor Native ancestors and the struggles of Native peoples to survive today. It is a day of remembrance and spiritual connection, as well as a protest of the racism and oppression of which Native Americans continue to experience. Currently, right now in Plymouth, it is raining, but you see the gathering in the solemn remembrance near Plymouth Rock. Everyone's in unison, everyone is chanting, singing. Once again, you're tuning in to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York, live here at the 51st annual National Day of Mourning, live from Plymouth, Massachusetts. Because remember, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Yep. And as we continue with the live stream, here's a little bit of music to get us through.
Test, test. Check, check. Check, check. Check, check. Check, check.
Can you remember the times that you have held? We've been mistreated and wronged. Over and over I hear those same words from you, good lady, and you, good man. Well, listen to me if you care where we stand and you feel you're a part of these ones. When a war between nations is lost, the loser
Once again, listeners, you're tuning into 99.5 FM, WBAI New York, awaiting the 51st National Day of Mourning, live from Plymouth, Massachusetts, brought to you by the United American Indians of New England. They're just setting up, they're just sound checking, but not to worry. Once they are through with their sound check, we will bring you right back to Plymouth, Massachusetts, with the 51st National Day of Mourning.
This afternoon with Keisha James, who is a Quinawampanoag, and we wanted to explain to you that we have an interpreter, ASL interpreter on stage, who is not wearing a mask because they can't wear masks, because you can't do ASL without your face. Believe me. Very important. So we have this amazing crew of four people here today who are going to be doing the interpretation for the live stream. We're so grateful that they came here to be with us, and we just wanted to explain again why there's no masking here. And now we want to introduce Keisha James.
Good afternoon, brothers, sisters, and siblings. Once again, on the fourth Thursday in November, United American Indians of New England and those who support us are gathered on this hill to observe a national day of mourning. Today marks the 50th anniversary of our being here in all kinds of weather to mourn our ancestors and speak the truth about our history. Those who started National Day of Mourning could not have envisioned that generations would still be here, year after year, carrying on this tradition. Many of the elders who stood on this hill and organized the first day of mourning are no longer with us, but we feel their spirits guiding us today. We are thinking today of so many and mourning their loss. 51 Thanksgivings ago, my grandfather, an Aquinawampanoag named Wamsutta Frank James, was invited to address a gathering celebrating the 350th anniversary of the arrival of the Pilgrims. When asked by the organizers to provide an advance copy of the speech he planned to deliver, Wamsutta agreed. When they saw his speech, the planners told him he could speak only if he were willing to offer false praise of the Pilgrims. According to the organizers of the event, the theme of the celebration is brotherhood, and anything inflammatory would be out of place. The organizers even offered to write a speech for him, one which would better fit with their settler colonialist narrative. He refused to have words put into his mouth, and National Day of Mourning came into being as a result of that refusal. Instead of speaking at the banquet, he and members of at least 25 tribes, as well as a sprinkling of non-Native allies, gathered here on this hill and observed the National Day of Mourning in 1970. That first year, my grandfather never did get a chance to deliver his speech on this hill, although some who don't actually know our history say he did. maybe 100 or 200 Native people and allies gathered, depending on which person is giving their recollection of this day. Indigenous people from this region and members of the Boston Indian Center organized and were joined by others, including some famous members of the American Indian Movement. They spoke about the Pilgrim invasion and issues throughout Indian country, marched around Plymouth, boarded the Mayflower II replica, and even buried Plymouth Rock. In the 1970s, UAne demanded the return of Wampanoag artifacts, including bones, that were being held by the gravedigger settlers at the Pilgrim Society Museum. At the fourth National Day of Mourning, the bones were returned to my grandfather and given a proper burial. In 1972, the police followed us around with police dogs, and a young woman, Judy Mendez, who had a U.S. flag draped around her shoulders, was attacked and arrested. Over the years, we repeatedly disrupted the Pilgrim Progress Parade, a tradition we continued until 1996. The following year, in 1997, we were blocked on Leiden Street and arrested without warning when we simply tried to march peacefully. The resulting defense of the Plymouth 25 led to the National Day of Mourning plaque you see here on Coles Hill and the Metacom plaque we will visit when we march. Consistently, our organization has not collaborated with the Pilgrims or their institutions, whether museums or the Mayflower Society or the Plymouth 400 International Colonizer Celebrations this year. We have our own story to tell in our own way. In addition to speaking about what is happening in this region and in the U.S., we have consistently sought to present issues that Indigenous people are facing internationally, not just here, because we are indeed all related. So what really happened at the first Thanksgiving, or what some of us call the first Thanks-taking? According to popular myth, the Pilgrims, seeking religious freedom, landed on Plymouth Rock. The Indians welcomed them with open arms, and then conveniently faded into the background, and everyone lived happily ever after the end. Here is the truth. First, the Pilgrims are glorified and mythologized because the circumstances of the first permanent English colony in North America, Jamestown, were too ugly to hold up as an effective national myth. There are important efforts now to teach school children about the African slaves held hostage at Jamestown. But no curriculum seems to want to teach kids about settler cannibalism. Pilgrims and Indians are a much more marketable story. Second, the Pilgrims came here as part of a commercial venture. They didn't need religious freedom. They already had that back in the Netherlands. The Mayflower Compact was merely a group of white men who wanted to ensure they would get a return on their investment. When they arrived, on Outer Cape, by the way, not that pebble down the hill, one of the first things the Pilgrims did was to rob Wampanoag graves at Corn Hill and steal as much of their winter provisions of corn and beans as they were able to carry. The writings of the colonists themselves describe these actions taking place. The next part of the mythology is true. Some Wampanoag ancestors did welcome the Pilgrims and save them from starvation. And what did we get in return for this kindness? Genocide, the theft of our lands, slavery, starvation, and never-ending oppression. It is also important to remember that the first official Thanksgiving did not take place in 1621 when the Pilgrims had a harvest time meal provided largely by the Wampanoag. Plymouth Colony Governor William Bradford declared a Pilgrim Day of Thanks in 1623 to give thanks for the abundance of the harvest and for their God protecting them from what he called the ravages of the savages, meaning the ravages of us, the people whose land and lives they stole. In 1637, Governor Winthrop of the Massachusetts Bay Colony declared a day of Thanksgiving to celebrate the massacre of over 700 Pequot men, women, and children on the banks of the Mystic River in Connecticut. William Bradford of the Plymouth Colony wrote of this event, "Those that escaped the fire were slain with the sword, some hewed to pieces, others run through with their rapiers. They thus destroyed about 400 at this time. It was a fearful sight to see them thus frying in the fire. Horrible was the stink and scent thereof, but the victory seemed a sweet sacrifice, and they gave their prayers thereof to God, who had so wrought for them this victory." Subsequent slaughters of indigenous people would be celebrated by a day of Thanksgiving, and yet the history books call us the savages. So why does any of this matter? It is simple. When people perpetuate the myth of Thanksgiving, they are not only erasing our genocide, but also celebrating it. But we did not simply fade into the background as the Thanksgiving myth says. We have survived and thrived. We have persevered. The very fact that you are here is proof that we did not vanish. Our very presence frees this land from the lies of the history books and the myth makers. We will remember and honor all of our ancestors in the struggle who went before us. We will speak truth to power, as we have been doing since the first day of mourning in 1970. That first day of mourning in 1970 was a powerful demonstration of Native unity. It has continued for all these years as a powerful demonstration of Indigenous unity and of the unity of all people who speak truth to power. Sadly, many of the conditions that prevailed in Indian country in 1970 still prevail today. In 1970, our average life expectancy was just 44 years. Today, it is up, but for Native men, it is still 6 years below that of white people. Native women's death rate has increased 20% over the past 15 years. In 1970, the average Native yearly income was $4,347. In 2019, 20% of Native people still earned under $5,000 per year. In 1970, our suicide and infant mortality rates were among the highest in the country. This has not changed. We all know that racism is alive and well. All of us are struggling under the oppression of a capitalist system which forces people to make a bitter choice between heating and eating. We will continue to gather on this hill until corporations and the U.S. military stop polluting the earth, until we dismantle the brutal apparatus of mass incarceration. We will not stop until the oppression of our two-spirit siblings is a thing of the past. When unhoused people have homes. When children are no longer taken from their parents and locked in cages. When the Palestinians reclaim the homeland and the autonomy Israel has denied them for the past 70 years. When no person goes hungry or is left to die because they have little or no access to quality health care. When insulin is free. When union busting is a thing of the past. Until then, the struggle will continue. In 1970, we demanded an end to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It is still a demand today. Native nations should not need federal oversight to govern ourselves or take control of our own lands. I hope you will stand with the Mashpee, as Mashpee continues to be under threat in the waning days of the vicious Trump administration. As we did in 1970, we mourn the loss of millions of our ancestors and the devastation of our land, water, and air. We condemn all acts of violence and terrorism perpetrated by all governments and organizations against innocent people worldwide. Since the invasion of Columbus and the rest of the Europeans, Native people have been virtually nonstop victims of terrorism. From the colonial period to the 21st century, this has entailed torture, massacres, systematic military occupations, and the forced removals of indigenous peoples from their ancestral homelands. Let us not forget that this country was founded on the ideology of white supremacy, the widespread practice of African slavery, and a policy of genocide and land theft. Let us not forget that under the pipelines, skyscrapers, mines, and the oil rigs lie the interned bones, sacred objects, and villages of our Native ancestors. On our program will be only Indigenous speakers. This is one day when we speak for ourselves without non-Native people, so-called experts, intervening to interpret and speak for us. Today, on liberated territory, we will correct the history of a country that continues to glorify butchers such as Christopher Columbus, that makes slave-owning presidents such as Washington and Jefferson into godlike figures, and even carves their faces into the sacred Black Hills of the Lakota. In 1970, very few people would have given any thought to the fact that indigenous people of this hemisphere do not look upon the arrival of the European invaders as a reason to give thanks. Today, many thousands stand with us in spirit as we commemorate the 2020 National Day of Mourning. In the spirit of Crazy Horse, in the spirit of Metacom, in the spirit of Geronimo, above all, to all people who fight and struggle for real justice, we are not vanishing, we are not conquered, we are as strong as ever.
sounding good. It's tested. Oh, yeah. I can hear it.
That was Keisha Kimimi Lasha James. Yeah. My name is Matoi Monroe, and I'm the co-leader of United American Indians of New England. It's raining a little bit today. It may rain more, and it's so beautiful to see everyone who still came out today. Greetings to those of you who are here with us in Plymouth today for the 50th anniversary of National Day of Mourning. And we warmly welcome those of you who are watching the live stream, too. And we thank Sunny Singh and all the other technical people who have made this happen, because it's been really complicated, and they made it seem really easy. Here we are, deep in the heartland of colonialism. Here we are, at a place where great dying occurred, overlooking a harbor where Wampanoag, Nipmuc, Massachusetts, and other indigenous captives were shipped off as slaves. Let's take a moment to think about those who are no longer with us. Our elders leave us, and they take so much knowledge with them when they do. It makes us feel lonely to be without them. But we also feel our ancestors here beside us, holding us up today. We pray for those who cannot be here with us today, for all of the people and communities hit hard by COVID, especially Indigenous and Black and Latinx communities with much higher rates of hospitalizations and deaths. We think of all the Indigenous people throughout this hemisphere who are being swept away by this horrible disease, from British Columbia to Dineta to Brazil. As of yesterday, the hard-hit Navajo Nation has had more than 15,000 positive cases and 638 deaths. Many other communities are suffering tremendously. Our people all too often lack basic resources, clean water for washing, decent health care, and other things that would help to reduce the amount of sickness and death. But Indigenous people are largely trapped under governments that do not care about our future and fail to take the necessary steps to make sure we are all protective. When Native nations ask for government help, they may be sent body bags instead of much-needed supplies, or the bureaucrats want to fight over sending relief money to tribes. To the settler governments, the saying, "The only good Indian is a dead Indian," seems to remain true to this day. We think today of the many people and allies who are unable to be here with us. Juan and Rosalba, who normally do our opening ceremony, are staying in Maya homelands because of the difficulties in traveling during the pandemic. Munanam James, my co-leader, is not here today. He has been in the hospital for a few weeks, and I would ask for all of you to do a shout out to him right now so that he'll be able to hear it on the recording. Others are not here because they're in quarantine or at high risk or are caring for sick family members. This is a difficult year. The epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirits continues. Yesterday brought devastating news about a local missing Mashpee Wampanoag teen, Jalasia Finkley, whose body was believed to have been found in Florida. And today we offer our deepest condolences to her family and her community. We acknowledge the many struggles that all of you have carried here today, from the many efforts to stop pipelines and the Weymouth compressor station, to the ongoing work to free Puerto Rico, to the attempted desecration of sacred Mauna Kea by scientists who lack respect for Indigenous sacred places, to occupied Palestine. And we say loudly here and now, and forever, Black Lives Matter. Our speakers today will reflect some of the struggles that Indigenous peoples are leading and involved in. We begin with a speak out here on Coles Hill, then we'll march to Post Office Square for a brief rally and on down to Plymouth Rock, where we'll have a final rally. Following that, there will be many pre-recorded messages to listen to from other struggles, and I'll tell you more about that later. Defending tribal sovereignty is certainly as much an issue today as it was at the original National Day of Mourning in 1970. Native nations continue to have their sovereignty and land rights denied and infringed upon, regardless of whether the tribal nations have treaties or not, and regardless of whether they have federal recognition or not. Both of the federally recognized tribes in this state, the Akwina and the Mashpee Wampanoag, have had their tribal sovereignty restricted and been denied the sovereign use of their own lands by settler governments. Earlier this year, the Trump administration, in an act of cruelty amidst the onset of COVID, attempted to disestablish the Mashpee Wampanoag Reservation. And these attempts are ongoing, even in the final days of the reign of Trump. The U.S. government also continues to deny federal recognition to other tribes in the region, such as the Massachusetts and Nipmuc, among others. Nevertheless, they continue to strengthen cultures and political sovereignty with or without federal recognition. Of course, tribal sovereignty is not just being challenged in this region. In Southern California and Arizona, for instance, Trump's border wall has been desecrating the sacred sites of the Kumeyaay Nation, the Tohono O'odham people, and many others. It's also been dividing these indigenous communities because the U.S.-Mexico border cuts through their lands. The immigrant pilgrim nation that is the United States has a short memory and is in denial of their own historical facts. This government is descended from the invaders who forcibly took our lands and resources from us, then denied us the use of our languages and cultures. Once again, we express our support for migrant communities targeted by ICE and ask the question, who's the illegal alien, pilgrim? In the various discussions of so-called illegal immigrants, the settlers laud their own achievements, claiming that America is a nation of immigrants while ignoring the centuries of murder and violence perpetrated against Black and Native people by these same immigrants. We celebrate and applaud the tremendous efforts and victory of the indigenous majority in Bolivia, who were able to boot out the fascist, violent, U.S.-backed government that was installed last year. The people have made it possible for Evo Morales and others to return to their homeland. And when he was driven out of Bolivia by the fascist militia, Evo Morales said, "I will return and I will be millions," and he meant it. We speak at a time of days of action sweeping across so-called Canada, from coast to coast, from the Tiny House Resistance and Gitimten and Wet'suwet'en to Six Nations of the Grand River to Mi'kmaq homeland. All around the world, Indigenous people continue to defend and protect their lands. It's really important for those of us who live here in the U.S. to show our solidarity with others in struggle and to bring public awareness to all Indigenous struggles and all acts of violence against Indigenous peoples, not just the ones occurring in North America. We are all united in our fight against settler colonialism, and we must remember that what happens to one of us happens to all of us. The residential school days may be over, but the Indian Child Welfare Act, which should prevent our children from being stolen by non-Native people, continues to be under attack. If the Indian Child Welfare Act is repealed, we could return to the grim time when thousands upon thousands of Native children were taken from their homes to be adopted by white families. Already, huge numbers of our kids are put into foster care. This is one reason why we say the genocide of indigenous peoples is ongoing, not something that happened in the past. Although Trump will soon be gone, and of course everyone is happy about that, we will still not have anyone in the White House who's truly committed to working with indigenous people. The legacy will continue of underfunding programs, of denying our full rights to sovereignty, of supporting those who exploit the land rather than those who defend the land and water. We come together at a time when people are terrified about climate collapse and the future, and there is so much suffering already. I want to say that individual actions are not going to save us when corporations and the U.S. military account for 70% of the world's pollution. Promoting a narrative of individual responsibility is not going to save us. Hoping that capitalism will get kinder will not save us. The Green New Deal is not enough to save us. Only by listening to indigenous people and dismantling the system that puts profit before people will we be able to save the planet. Indigenous peoples have always been caretakers of the land, water, and the life thereon, despite intense efforts of settler governments to stop us from doing so. For generations, indigenous people have been warning about climate disaster. It's not too late to achieve some climate justice on this planet, but indigenous voices must be centered. One of many ways that people are working to center indigenous voices is through education and legislation. Here in Massachusetts, we have a Massachusetts Indigenous Legislative Agenda that still has three bills before the state legislature. A bill to redesign the racist state flag and seal image. A bill to ban the use of Native American sports team mascots. And a bill to protect sacred Native heritage. There's a lot you can do to help us get those bills passed before the legislature adjourns in December. You can go to maindigenousagenda.org for more information. We will continue to demand the abolition of Columbus Day and the celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day across the state and across this country. We will continue to demand that all representations of white supremacy come down, including changing the name of Faneuil Hall in Boston, which is named after a slave trader. I end with talking about land back again, something on the lips of many indigenous people. Treaties need to be honored. Lands need to be returned. There are ways to start the process of decolonizing the lands and to address climate collapse right now. First, ensure that no projects can go through any indigenous nation's land without free, prior, and informed consent. Second, take all of the land that's currently being mismanaged by all the settler governments, such as the national parks or the Amazon rainforest, and let indigenous nations manage that land. That would mean the restoration of millions of acres of our lands to us. It would also mean the end of the desecration of many sacred sites, such as the Black Hills or Sacred Oak Flat. Third, cancel all the leases, pipelines, mining, and corporate contracts, and let indigenous people decide what development should continue and what should not. I don't want anyone who hears this to feel like you should give up, despite how hard 2020 has been. We can fight together for climate justice. We can take care of each other and do our best to mask up and reduce the spread of this plague. We can end settler colonialism. We can reclaim our lands. We are not vanishing. We are not conquered. We are as strong as ever. Okay, next we're going to hear from Samantha Maltes, who is a Quina Wampanoag and an Indigenous rights activist.
Niki Suk, Natasawi, Samantha Maltes, Nu Tomas, Aquinaha Nut, Ninwampanoag. Hi, my name is Samantha Maltes, and I'm a member of the Wampanoag Nation of Aquina. Some of you may know me as the daughter of Chairwoman Cheryl Andrews Maltes. I actually have a first name. It is Samantha. I prefer to go by that. And it is so good to be here today to talk to you all. It's so good to be able to speak my language on this land. So many generations went by without being able to do that. And for me to be able to speak to you all today, to see your faces in the most crazy circumstances, it's a blessing. So I want to thank the Creator, thank all of you, and say katapatanamu, thank you all. So I'm talking to you today a little bit about me and a little bit about the work that I do as an Indigenous rights activist. So I'll start when I was a kid. So when I was a kid, I grew up in the Massachusetts public school curriculum. The Massachusetts public school curriculum brought me to Plymouth. As a Native child, they brought me here and they showed me the Plymouth Rock, the Mayflower replica, and brought me through Plymouth Plantation. Now, mind you, in the summertime, I was dancing on the powwow trail, but in the fall, I would come back to my classroom and make cardboard turkeys and fake headdresses in the fall. That transition for me was really difficult, and that's why I understand that words matter. The way we talk about Thanksgiving in our education system, it matters because it impacts Native students like me, Native students around the country, and everyone's idea of what Native people are today. That's where the initiative for my campaign, #MayflowersKill, comes from. I'm a consultant for an international Indigenous rights organization called Survival International. And you're probably wondering what the idea of the Mayflower history has to do with Indigenous rights. So I'll tell you, because I get this comment a lot on our posts. And we post content that is just quotes and stories from Native people to express how they feel about this history. And I get comments and I get DMs from certain individuals who ask me, you know, why can't you just leave the past in the past? Like, move on. It's been 400 years. And I love that question so much because it's just dripping with ignorance and fragility. Because the reason we can't leave the past in the past is for all the reasons we've said already on the stage today. Tribes are still fighting for tribal sovereignty. We're still fighting for our land back. We're still fighting for our culture and our language and our religion and our traditions so that we can come to places like this, speak to you all, and get our message out around the world so that we have visibility. We're still fighting that fight, and that's why we can't leave the past in the past. The history of the Mayflower is very real and very present. It's our present and our future, and it's impacting us every day. Contact and colonialism impacts us every single day. And it's not just here. It's not just Plymouth or Massachusetts or New England. It's impacting Indian country around the country. Tribes are fighting, like we said, for their self-determination, their sovereignty, in the courtroom, on the front lines, in front of pipelines that are cutting through traditional burial grounds and sacred sites. And we're fighting this fight in the classroom, asking for people to listen to us and center Indigenous voices in the education that we teach about Thanksgiving. #MayflowersKill is a movement more than it is just a campaign. And it's related to so much more than just history. It's related to so much more than just history because the past isn't in the past. It's happening still. Not only are tribes still fighting for our rights, but it's happening around the world. Modern day Mayflowers exist. Colonialism still exists. And tribes are still fighting in the most rural parts of the world. Places like the Andaman Islands, West Papua, in Africa and in the Amazon, there are tribes that are still facing the threat of extractive industries, of problematic governments that refuse to recognize the rights of the Indigenous people, their claim to their lands. That's why this history is so important, and that's why we need to understand that we still must talk about it, because you can't just leave the past in the past. Across the Amazon, there are about 100 uncontacted tribes. There's uncontacted tribes there, the Andaman Islands and West Papua. These uncontacted tribes are struggling right now because the threat of COVID-19 is so severe there that the idea of a single evangelical missionary or minor could wipe out an entire group of people. That's an entire culture lost, an entire generation of humans who will cease to exist just because these governments and these people don't understand that according to the United Nations and every other human rights organization, tribes have the right to self-determination. They have the right to remain uncontacted. And that's why the Mayflower history is so relevant today. Because until we understand this history from an indigenous perspective and listen to Native people when we say that it's still happening and that the impacts were tragic, it'll continue to happen everywhere in the world. And so I just want to remind you all to remember that history matters, language matters, and the past is not just part of the past. Katapatash. Thank you, everyone. Katapatanamu. There's an amazing lineup of events for today, so I'm just really grateful to be able to speak to you all. And, yeah, aho.
Samantha, thank you so much. Every year at National Day of Mourning for decades, we have a message from Native political prisoner Leonard Peltier. Leonard Peltier is not only a political prisoner, but he's a father, grandfather, American Indian Movement warrior, and artist, who has been unjustly and harshly imprisoned since 1976 for a crime that he did not commit. The FBI falsified evidence and withheld exonerating evidence in order to imprison him under these frame-up charges, yet no court will give him a new trial or release him. If you don't know about his case, I urge you to educate yourself by going to whoisleonardpeltier.info and getting all the facts. Normally, when his statement is read, we have a blanket dance here on the Hill. This year, we're not going to have a blanket dance because of COVID. So I encourage all of you to go to the website of his defense committee and donate there as well. Again, it's whoisleonardpeltier.info. Burt Waters, a Wampanoag elder, usually reads the statement, but he's not able to be here today. So Chalinaru has very kindly offered to read the statement for Leonard.
Daigwe, Mabrika, Dairi Chalinaru. Good day. Thank you for being here. My name is Chalinaru. I will be reading the statement from Mr. Peltier. Before I do this, I also want to send out respects and my condolences to the families of the Wampanoag Nation for Jalasia. Just take 1 second to just think of them and bow your head and say a prayer in your head as they are suffering through this. Ha home Seneko Kakuna. Greetings, my relatives, friends, loved ones, and supporters. First of all, I want to thank you for the privilege of being allowed to express my feelings about this day of mourning, as we call it, and day of Thanksgiving, as the rest of the U.S. calls it. Sometimes I'm at a loss for words to express all the thoughts I have going on in my head after 45 years of imprisonment. I do want to express my appreciation for our ancestors before us who fought so hard that we would live today. I want to express my feelings of remembrance for the ones who were overpowered by the weapons of war coming from Europe and the pandemics they faced. Though we have been attacked by the invaders of Europe over and over in every way possible, and everything that has been done to destroy us, our culture and traditions, we still survived until today because we are an expression of the Creator's will and an expression of the Creator's truth. We are a manifestation of that truth, that all mankind should live within the boundaries of those laws. There is nothing that came from Europe that has made this portion of the earth a better place to live. But like all nature, we have survived, and nature continues to survive, though mankind is on the edge of destroying itself. The truths that our people spoke of, the need to live in harmony with each other, the Creator, the Mother Earth, and respect to one another's approach to spirituality, when expressed by non-Indians, becomes a sensation around the world. We must continue to speak our truth, to live our truth, and to support one another for their lives, our survival. The most powerful weapons that we can obtain is knowledge of truth and love for one another and the practice of that truth and love. We must unite and work together every chance we can and embrace all others who are of like mind and willing to work to correct this worldwide pandemic of greed and selfishness that has infected the whole earth and mankind. On this day of mourning, let us again remember our relatives before us who fought every challenge imaginable that we might survive, and in our prayers say, thanks for not giving up. Thanks for giving your lives as we might live. And to all of you out there, I want to say thanks for not giving up on me and my quest for freedom. May the Creator bless you in every way, your brother always, in all ways. In the spirit of Crazy Horse and Resistance, Mitakuye Oyasing Doksha Leonard Pelletier. Thank you for giving me this honor to be able to read his words. Seneko Kakona Hahom Hanhan Katu.
Back in 1997, when we attempted to march, we were attacked by multiple police agencies and pepper sprayed, people dragged through the street by their hair, elders pepper sprayed, 25 of us arrested. And as a result of that, we entered into a treaty with the town of Plymouth, which includes that we are allowed forever to march on National Day of Mourning without getting a permit and without getting their permission. And we're going to do that today because we do that every year and have been doing it for decades. And we do it because there are places in Plymouth that we want to go to and talk about. There are places here that we want to liberate by our presence. We want to liberate the streets and waterfront here in Plymouth, a place that serves as a fundamental symbol of the pilgrim mythology, a place that profits off the suffering that was brought by the pilgrims. So we're asking everyone now to form up behind the banners here, march with us. I will tell you, if you can't march far, the march will be at maximum 10 blocks today. It's not a very long march, but I wanted to let you know. Normally, we would have cars to put people in who can't walk the march, but we're not able to do that because of COVID, so we apologize for that. It just is what it is this year. So is everybody ready to march? Okay, let's do this.
doing what I can because I...
Habitakyapi, Napa Chuzapi, Chante Washte. I greet everyone with a traditional Lakota greeting, an open heart, and a handshake to all of our brothers, sisters, and relatives across the world who are tuning in to this year's National Day of Mourning. There's something about the weather. Last year, bushfires in Australia scorched more than 46 million acres, an area larger than Hungary and Portugal combined. Flames shot nearly half a mile in the air, killing 34 humans and more than 1 billion animals. In the United States, 8.2 million acres burned, killing 37 people and displacing countless others. Swarms of locusts darkened the sky in parts of East Africa and West Asia, devouring plants and fruits as they tore through the land, leaving hardly a scrap of green. A single living swarm in Kenya amassed the size three times larger than New York City. Tens of millions today face increased food insecurity. But the horsemen of the apocalypse can't ride alone without a plague. The coronavirus pandemic swept through the planet, sharpening two competing visions of humanity, one based on science and caretaking, and the other on pure make-believe. The most powerful nation in the world chose the latter. And across the United States, Black, Brown, Indigenous, migrants, and poor people in general have bore the brunt of Black.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. To just finish listening to the 51st annual National Day of Mourning presented over in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The last voice you just heard was Nick Estes. We're about to go into the next program, which happens to be